Start the engine now. This incline bottoms out in less than a mile.
Let's just keep rolling until we stop. No sense in tempting them back to us.
Though the rear cargo compartment of the Hotspur could accommodate 8 people, it wasn't the best place for a field hospital. Mildred methodically cleaned her patient's wounds, swabbed away the blood, and checked his vital signs. Mildred Wyeth was a medical doctor, a former specialist in cryogenic sciences. Though she was in her mid-30s, she was chronologically well over a century old. Mildred had entered a hospital in late 2000 for minor surgery, but a freak reaction to the anesthetic had necessitated her body being placed in cryonic stasis until a treatment could be found. It never was. The world was blown apart before she was revived, and she slept like a fly trapped in amber for 100 years. Ryan had found her in a shielded underground cell, her life support system still functioning. He had brought her back to life, into a world she had never dreamed existed. The cryogenic process and suspension of life seemed to have reversed the ill effects of the anesthetic. Besides her medical skills, Mildred had proved herself invaluable as a tenacious survivalist. She had also won a silver medal for free pistol shooting in the last ever Olympic Games. Watching her ministrations with a clinical interest was another refugee from a past time period, Dr. T.A. Tanner. Unlike Mildred, who had bobbed unknowingly down the temporal stream, Doc was the subject of a cold-hearted scientific practice known in pre-dark days as trawling. Since the 1940s, American military scientists and their counterparts in other countries had tried to reconcile Einsteinian physics with quantum mechanics. By the 1990s, the reconciliation attempts had spawned the ultra-top-secret experiment known as the totality concept. There were several subdivisions of the experiment, such as Over Project Whisper, Project Cerberus, and finally, Operation Kronos. With the use of a complex matter transfer device called a gateway, the project scientists had tried time and time again to snatch subjects from a past temporal line and trawl them to the present. Their only success was a man from 1896. Theophilus Algernon Tanner, Ph.D., scientist and scholar, was plucked from the bosom of his beloved family and deposited in a sterile subterranean chamber a century hence. Though he learned all he could about the 20th century, Doc never forsook the hope of returning to his wife and 2 children. His constant attempts to return to his own era so angered the overlords of Operation Kronos that they eventually used him as a trawling subject again. Rather than sending him back, they opted to transfer him decades into the future. Like Mildred, he missed the new cost by less than a month. All that remained of the totality concept and its spin-off researches were the matter transfer units tucked away in underground redoubts. The other members of the group were the products of the Hellgrounds, known as Deathlands. 16-year-old Jack Lauren had all the hard, bitter experience of a man twice his age. An albino, with fearsome ruby eyes and a shock of bone-white hair, he favored bladed weapons over firearms. He bore scars from many near-fatal encounters, the least of which curved up the corner of his mouth and across his high-planed face. Jack had buried 2 sets of families during his young life, his folks back in Louisiana, and his wife and infant daughter in New Mexico. He hid the tragedies behind a taciturn mask and an eerily calm, almost detached manner. Ryan Cotter and John Barrymore Dix had been companions for well over a decade, since they traveled the Appalachians in a pair of huge war wags with a legendary trader. The weapons dealer had been their undisputed leader and mentor, even something of a father figure to Ryan. Trader had earned a considerable fortune by uncovering hidden stockpiles of weapons and fuel and using them to barter his way through the Deathlands. He had been a fearsome figure in his day, a reputation he fully lived up to and enjoyed. The love of Ryan's life was Christy Roth, who was, by definition, a mutie. She possessed the empathic ability to sense danger. The few others with these prescient powers were called doomseers or doomies. Christy had been trained to hone this empathy by being in tune with the energies of Gaia, the great Earth Mother. By tapping into these energies, the power field of the planet itself, Christy could gain superhuman strength for a limited time. Ryan had an 11-year-old son, Dean. The issue of a brief encounter between Ryan and Sharona, the wild wife of a frontier baron, Dean had been united with his father for only a short time. Ryan grew used to being called Dad and was totally devoted to the boy. Recently, he had enrolled the lad for a year in the Brody School in Colorado. While his son received an education, the companions continued their journeys throughout Deathlands, with Ryan hoping to find that undefined something that would give his soul peace. Frequently, they used the gateway chambers to make Matran's jumps, but those jumps had too many variables since they never knew where, or even if, they would rematerialize. As Doc had pointed out on more than one occasion, it was like deliberately jumping from a hot yet familiar frying pan into an unknown fire. Though gateways were hidden in subterranean military complexes all over the continent, the vast majority were concentrated in the southwest. The Land Rover the companions were traveling in now had been found in the underground installation in Dulce, New Mexico. Before leaving the installation, they had found no clues as to what function it had been built to serve. There were the usual, no unauthorized personnel beyond this point warnings posted, but a curious symbol was imprinted at the bottom of every sign, a red triangle with three horizontal black lines running through it. The vehicle, one of several identical ones, was in almost perfect condition, with barely 100 miles on the odometer. A former patrol wag, it was outfitted with a barricade remover, spotlight, and public address system. There were a number of airtight containers of gasoline in the subterranean hideaway, and these had been used to power up a generator and recharge the battery. They had found a hand-operated air pump to reinflate the tires. The supply of gasoline and spare cans was sufficient to carry them several thousand miles, up through Kansas and Nebraska, skirting a corner of Colorado, and eventually to the ville once known as Calgary. After surveying that region, they intended to circle back around and pay a visit to Dean at his school. For the past few days, they had been following a remarkably well-preserved strip of road through South Dakota toward the Black Hills. Ryan and JB had passed through the region before, and since in pre-dark days it had been one of the most sparsely populated areas of America, they hoped violent encounters with muties or humans would be limited. However, the injured man on the floor had obviously come from a settlement of some sort, either a ville or a barony.
We're hitting the bottom of the grade, Ryan. What's the plan?
I'll take a quick look-see.
Ryan cautiously poked his head out and checked their backtrack.
Looks fine. Start her up.
Mildred lurched backwards as she was trying to affix a strip of gauze over one of the man's many lacerations.
Hey, watch it, JB!
Sorry. Got carried away. This wag handles like a dream. Much better than that old LAV we used to have. Oh, yeah, one thing. Got a pretty good look at that guy's bike when we passed it by. Looked like a Honda 150.
So?
It was in great shape. Almost perfect.
What's your point?
Motorcycles aren't the safest form of transportation. Most of the ones I've ever seen were wired together rattle traps.
Ryan considered JB's words and agreed with him. Because they offered no protection from chemstorms, muti and human attacks, or even bugs, motorcycles weren't the conveyance of choice in Deathlands.
He's coming around.
The stranger propped himself up on one elbow, made a tentative move to touch his groin, then blinked around.
Hey. Hey yourself. Before you ask, you're not hurt too badly. Contusions, abrasions, a lot of lacerations, but most are superficial.
You talk like a healer.
I am.
Those scream wings nearly chewed me to pieces. You got them off me?
Yeah. That's the only fair thing to do since we accidentally stirred them up. My name's Ryan. That's Christy, Mildred, Jack, Doc, and JB's driving.
Where are you from?
Far and away, hither and yon.
Never heard of them places.
What's your name?
Zadfrak.
Where are you from, Zadfrak?
Hellskell.
Is that a bill or what?
A what?
Though the light was dimming, Ryan gave Zadfrak a close inspection. No longer covered in blood, he didn't look like a healthy man. His face bore a deep pallor that the sun could never touch. His naked torso and limbs were fish-belly white. Between red-rimmed, watery blue eyes, an X was carved into the bridge of his nose. The scar looked like the result of a painful process involving a red-hot needle.